Thank you all for being here today. So my name is Sean Lucan. I'm going to get out of the way. I am a family doctor in the Bronx, but before heading to the Bronx, I was a research fellow at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and I had the opportunity to start working on this project, which we just finished up. I have two tremendous project co-authors on this, Allison Carpin and Sandy Sherman, who you'll hear more about. But I'll start out just by saying that none of us have any conflicts of interest or any competing any ties to the financial ties to disclose. I'll also disclose that since submitting this abstract, this paper was accepted and has been published. So if as I go through and you're interested in more details, you can obviously come up and talk to me after. But it's also available in print in the Journal of Urban Health. So why don't I begin today by just framing a discussion around diet-related diseases. So these are things like heart disease, cancer, stroke, contributing conditions like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, dyslipidemia. So these are the leading causes of disability and premature death in this country and most of the developed world. And disproportionately affect urban, low-income, and minority communities. And children are of particular concern. So diseases that we once thought as clinicians to be adult onset, we're now seeing in our pediatric population. So it's not unusual for me to see children like this in my own clinic. Part of the problem certainly is diets that are high in added sugar, unhealthy fats, extra sodium, low in fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and probably certainly contributed by food environments that just support unhealthy dietary behaviors. So one aspect of the food environment that may be particularly important, particularly in urban communities, is the corner store. Now, whether you call these corner stores or bodegas or mini marts or convenience stores, depending on where you are regionally, the point is that they're small urban stores that are embedded within residential neighborhoods, and they're usually not too far from schools. This is an example of what a corner store looks like in Philadelphia. We know from other studies that this is where urban kids who live in the city, buy unhealthy snack foods, and these unhealthy snack foods contribute a significant proportion of a child's daily calories. And past literature suggests that the food being sold in corner stores is somewhat limited in scope and probably less healthy. But there's a problem, and the problem was when we started this was that we didn't really think anyone had done a comprehensive evaluation of what was being sold in corner stores. And certainly it didn't appear that anyone had really looked at snack foods. Part and parcel with that, we didn't really know what the nutritional component of these snack foods were, what the implications might be for children, or where the snack foods were coming from. So the solution was a partnership. An academic nonprofit partnership, so with myself representing Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and then Allison Carpin and Sandy Sherman from the Food Trust. So this is a Philadelphia-based nonprofit that's dedicated to ensuring everyone has access to healthy, affordable food. And so the goals of our partnership, or the aims, were to describe snack foods, to sort of do an item-by-item inventory of the snack foods available in Philadelphia corner stores, and then assess what the nutritional content of these snack foods were and what the implications might be for a child's diet. We then wanted to determine what the sources of the snack foods were and use all of this information to come up with ways to improve the healthfulness of corner store offerings and hopefully community nutrition and child health down the road. So the study really began with a campaign that was organized by the Food Trust. So in the school year 2003 to 2004, the Food Trust went into three Philadelphia public schools and did focus groups with 6th to 8th graders. So this is just a schematic of the schools. They were in three different parts of the city. You can see two of the schools were in South Philadelphia, one was in the Northeast. All of the schools were in low-income areas. So you can see that more than 3/4 of the students in each of the schools qualified for a subsidized lunch or a free or low-cost lunch. And there were important demographic differences between the schools. So one was in a predominantly one was a predominantly Asian school, one predominantly Latino, and one a predominantly Black school. And so so what the Food Trust did was do these focus groups, ask the kids about their shopping and snacking behaviors, ask them where they were shopping around school to get these snack foods, And then they would observe kids, or they would observe the stores that kids indoors shopping at before and after school to see if kids were really shopping at. And they found 9 stores around school 1, 3 stores around school 2, and 5 stores around school 3 for a total of 17. They were all independently owned, so no big chains like 7-Eleven. And they were all within 4 blocks of their respective schools. So then we wanted to go into the school and see what are the snack foods that they're shelling. So looking at the shelves, what are the foods available on the shelves for these kids to buy? So we defined snacks as anything kids reported as eating as snacks. And those were single serve items, mostly like a 1-ounce bag of chips, but oftentimes there were multiple serving items, like a 6-ounce bag of chips. And then also things that the staff agreed could be consumed by children as a snack, even if the children weren't reporting. So things like a single serve pop top, fruit cup that could be eaten with a plastic spoon, as opposed to like canned peaches that would require an opener. Okay. So we categorized the snack foods. We came up with 3 basic categories. So fruits and vegetables. So these are things like fresh fruits, bananas, dried fruits like raisins, prepared packaged fruits like fruit cup. Dried legumes like peanuts and soybeans, and then fruit and vegetable sauces like salsa and applesauce. And then whole grain products like granola, popcorn, crackers, whole grain chips, and then a whole list of processed items. So these are things where the principal or primary ingredient was enriched flour or some kind of refined sugar, hydrogenated oils, and we subdivided that into 2 categories, salty snacks or refined sweets. We also wanted to look at the sources, where these foods were coming from. We looked at manufacturers and categorized them as either single brand. So those are things that could have multiple products, but all coming under one brand. So an example would be Harris. So they have the Harris potato chips and then all the different flavors, but they're all called Harris potato chips. And then multi-brand companies like Frito-Lay. So Frito-Lay makes the Fritos and Cheetos and Tostitos and Doritos and really all the Cheetos and some other things too. And then we wanted to look at the nutritional content, right? So for prepackaged items, we just looked at the label. For fresh items, we used a software package. And we want to look at total calories, total fat, sugar, sodium, and then compare that to the daily reference intakes and WHO guidelines. And we also divided foods into healthy versus unhealthy based on a comprehensive school nutrition policy task force standard. So you can see the standard here. It's less than 7 grams of fat, less than 15 grams of sugar, less than 300 milligrams of sodium. Obviously an imperfect standard, but one that had been adopted by the Philadelphia school system, so it was already in use and easy to apply, and so it gives us some information. So this is what we found. So in the corner stores, there were 452 different kinds of snack foods, and those were supplied by 65 different manufacturers. Interestingly, only 15% of the product lines were common between all 3 neighborhoods. And most of them, or many of them, were only found in 1. So there was huge variety and huge differences between the neighborhoods. But within neighborhoods, there was little difference. It was mostly based on store size. So larger stores have more variety, more kinds of snacks, smaller stores less variety. But despite that variation, or that huge variety, the categories of snack foods were relatively constant between the schools. So in none of the neighborhoods, there were no fruits and no vegetable snacks in any of the neighborhoods. Only about 3% of the snacks in any of the neighborhoods were whole grain products. And about 97% in all the neighborhoods were processed, prepackaged foods. And the ratio of sweet to salty varied from 1-to-1 to 2-to-1. but despite that variation, the potential nutritional implications, I think, can best be summarized by our friend, Mr. Yuck. So if we consider a hypothetical child, and by hypothetical, I mean, we just said a child of average weight, a child of average activity level, a single snack item from any of the neighborhoods, on average, would supply that child with 6-14% of a day's recommended calories, fat, sugar, and sodium. And at the extreme, so for the worst snack food in all the areas, in all the neighborhoods, half a day's calories, a full day's fat, and greater than 1.5 times a day's sugar and sodium. 80% of the snacks were unhealthy if we use the manufacturer's definition of a serving, but again, because we're buying big packages and eating big packages, so if we consider the package as a serving, 90% of the foods were considered unhealthy. And notably, this included things that would be promoted or marketed as healthier items, like baked chips or baked cheese curls, and 6 of 11 of the whole grain products we found. So most of the popcorns and granola bars. So manufacturers. So the top manufacturer was constant between all three neighborhoods, and that was Harris. But interestingly, despite there being so many manufacturers, 5 of the 65 accounted for 75% of all of the snack foods there. And the top two manufacturers were single brand, like Harris, and 85% of all manufacturers are single brands. So what are the implications of this? So what can we conclude? So essentially, despite the illusion of variety, I mean, it's really just kind of it's kind of smoke and mirrors. It's a mirage. I mean, yes, there's variation in snack foods between the neighborhoods and within stores. And yes, there's a large number of manufacturers supplying them. But when it comes to snack food categories and nutritional content, everything is remarkably constant. Corner stores are predominantly selling unhealthy snack food, not surprisingly. No fruit options, no vegetable options. The whole grain options were few and far between, and the ones that were there were high in added fat, sugar, or sodium. And the vast majority of foods were highly processed, prepackaged items of either the salty or sweet variety. And the potential implications for an average child is that they could have, half a day's calories or greater than 100% fat, sugar, or sodium. I don't know, what am I doing on time?
Here.
Okay, so then I'll talk about why that. That's probably the best case scenario. That's probably an underestimation. And the reason for that, there's probably three reasons for that. So one is that our hypothetical child presumed to be of an average weight and average activity level. But these are urban kids in low-income neighborhoods who have much higher than average weight and much lower than average activity levels. So that's an underestimation. The other thing is that for sugar, we use the dietary reference intake. We use a U.S. standard which says added sugar should be less than 25% of total daily calories. But WHO says it should be less than 10%. So if you use the world standard, then obviously this is, it's obviously much worse if you consider it in that context. And then the third thing is that this is for a single snack, but kids, we know from other literature, aren't buying a single snack. They're buying multiple snacks and consuming multiple snacks. So if you consider that, there's a multiplicative effect. So strengths and limitations. So the strengths, this was a detailed evaluation of snacks available on the shelves in corner stores, including shelf-stable fruits and vegetables, which to our knowledge hadn't really been done before, multiple stores in three ethnically distinct low-income urban communities. And we considered the production source, where these foods were coming from. The limitations, obviously it's a select sample of stores and a select sample of neighborhoods in a single city, so there's some implications for generalizability. And again, we only considered shelf snacks, not slaughter product inventories, and we only measured what's available, not sold or consumed. However, a study that preceded ours that also looked at Philadelphia corner stores showed that kids were buying and consuming unhealthy snacks exclusively. So if we assume that what's available in stores influences what kids are purchasing and what they're eating, how can we move forward? What might we do? What are some potential pathways or mechanisms to address this problem and improve the situation? So as I said, most of our manufacturers in this study, the vast majority, 85%, were single brand manufacturers. So if manufacturers like this, 3 minutes, I'm fine. So manufacturers like this can experiment with healthier product lines. So for instance, they can offer baked, full grain, low salt chips as opposed to fried, refined, high salt chips. Multi-brand manufacturers, which were the minority in our sample, actually probably have even more flexibility because they don't have to, take risks with their brand name. They can just develop healthier brands. So like Frito-Lay has Sun Chips, which are, arguably less unhealthy than Cheetos. So local, state governments, national government get together and pass legislation and consider policy affecting packaged foods. So New York City has been very progressive in this regard. So with the trans fat ban and a campaign to regulate the sodium in processed foods, and that can be very influential. Nonprofit organizations like the Food Trust can support store ownership and the acquisition of refrigeration and other equipment to store perishable, fresh, healthy items, and help make connections between store owners and local farmers and local bakers, and to take advantage of regional sourcing for healthy food. Corner store owners could experiment with limited samples of healthier products to see how they sell in their communities. And then, of course, consumers, who might otherwise be called customers or constituents based on their relationships with the above, you know, can place pressure on all of the above and make change. So I think that pretty much ends it for me. I just want to thank a lot of people. So at Einstein and at Temple for you know, all the people listed here for helping to review and revise the manuscript, and all the people at the Food Trust for helping conduct the study, collect the data, public data management. As I said, this has been published, so if you're interested in more details, they're available in the Journal of Urban Health.
We do have time for some questions.
Yeah. So I actually came into this late in the phase after all of the data collection had been done. So that was part of the Food Trust, a broader campaign to look at corner stores. So my understanding is that staff at the Food Trust did work very closely with corner store owners and get permission. In fact, I didn't give the detail in neighborhood three, but there were actually 7 stores that were identified, even though only 5 were included. And 2 did not participate, 1 because of the owner's logistical concerns about disrupting business, having people in there counting snacks and looking suspicious for clipboards, and the other didn't participate due to linguistic barrier, language barrier. Other questions? Here first.
Among the snacks that you pictured, it looked like you had edamame,
yeah,
as well as the fruit cup. So, and then later you said none of the stores were selling vegetables or fruits.
No.
So, the fruit cup and the edamame, you did not see in any of the
signs.
Okay.
So no fruit cup, no edamame, no bananas, no raisins, no trail mix. No.
Wow.
It's kind of the same question along the line. Do you see because food on the shelf are more stable, they tend to be stay there a little longer compared to any other?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a big barrier or challenge for corner stores, and that's why you know, having refrigeration and other equipment would help them store perishable items, but there's certainly, like, you know, I was coming off the last question. I mean, there are shelf-stable fruit and vegetable products. I mean, there's, you know, dried fruits, there's, you know, salted, roasted, you know, packaged fruits that are probably a healthier option than a lot of the, you know, prepackaged, highly processed fare that, you know, kids are being exposed to.
I wonder if you thought of working with or looking at the distributors who supply these corner stores to see if some changes could be made there.
So that wasn't part of this, but obviously that's the next step, right? Because it's like, how do the things get from the manufacturer to the corner stores, and what, you know, I mean, the ideal next step, you know, we would obviously like to look at more objective data, so things like sales receipts, invoices from distributors, you know, how, you know, interview owners of corner stores and see what's driving their decisions on what to stock. You know, is it consumer demand that's telling them what to put on their shelves, or is it pressure from the manufacturers or from the distributors? I mean, are they only delivering certain items? We don't really know. I mean, that's an unanswered question that's a potential new line for investigation. Oh, wow, this is the sea of hands. How much time do I have?
A couple
minutes. I'm going to throw a dart blindly. We'll get to this side of the room.
Are there programs, the preschools that you looked at, one of your last
has been, you know, very influential in that regard, and part of the broader corner store campaign, it was actually not just an assessment of the environment, but actually going into schools and teaching the kids about healthy snacks. So this was done in 2003-2004. Following that focus groups and this inventory, they did this whole instructional campaign with kids, educating them about, you know, healthier options and things, you know, better snack choices, and then also working with the corner stores to get healthier snacks. So working kind of both sides of the equation to improve the snacks, and there have been some demonstration models in specific stores within Philadelphia to make that happen. So, I mean, people are working on that.
Have the kids been asked to take leadership roles?
I mean, so the kids were very instrumental in helping design the campaign, coming up with the media that helps support them, and cartoon characters, and